do you have to say? Hello, and welcome to Tell Me About Your Song, the podcast where I talk to musicians and songwriters about a song they've written. Today's guest is Lucas Kwong of the Brother K Malay, and the song he'll be talking about is named Stranger from the Country. So where would you like to start, Lucas?
There's this, like, capital R romantic idea of the artist as someone who just kind of flows freely through life and lets ideas come to them. And what I've realized is if I let myself do that, then I will just postpone doing things. Like a lot of creative people, I can be kind of lazy. My church had an exhibit inspired by the Stations of the Cross. There's a lot of artists at this community, and you know, each artist was assigned to a different station. So I signed up to do one about the sentencing of Christ, and so it was kind of one of those things where there's a deadline. I have to produce something by this time. And also there's a limitation of subject. Now, of course, you know, within those broad parameters, I had kind of creative liberty to put my own spin on the song. But, you know, it's not going to be about the one time I had a road trip in New Orleans or something like that, right? I mean, there's a definite set of limitations from the beginning. And it just came in pieces. I remember in the third section of the song, the part. That whole part came to me all at once, was in the shower. And I was kind of scared of writing more because it just felt so perfect. That one part, I didn't want to ruin it by adding other parts that either made that part sound bad or weren't as good themselves. The thing about, you know, that I wanted to avoid writing a song is the kind of song that's very didactic. You know, when you're dealing with religion, when you're dealing with a song that touches on religion or sacred texts, you always run the risk of making it like, you know, an object lesson. And yeah, I guess the secular equivalent would be like a protest song where it's very blunt and clear. This is what the message is, right? And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want it to be that kind of monotonous. So I realized that a way around that could be to make it in multiple sections. And I've always loved the Beatles song Happiness is a Warm Gun. She's not a girl who misses much. So I thought maybe I can do something like that. Oh yeah. And then after that, it was pretty quick. Then I had the second part, which is from Pilot's perspective. And then I realized the third part could be, you know, the part that I originally came up with. There's four sections to the song, and I had the third section, but I didn't know it was this third section. And then maybe, you know, 2 months later, I was walking around outside, and, you know, when you're walking, I live in Brooklyn, and I live pretty close to the Brooklyn Museum, so I'm just going for a walk, and I was just kind of mumbling to myself, which I sometimes do, without a time signature, and I just had different words coming to me. Last night, my lady in the strangest dream. She was under a white moon. Nothing was as it seemed. Everything was too soon. And that's how the first section started, because, you know, the first section of the song has no time signature. And I just had words at that point, and I briefly considered, like, forcing them into a meter. And I was like, maybe just leave it, and that could be the introduction. They would know you. You said better than you might think if you'd allow me to show you. Cause this is the hour and the bow. And because of those words, you know, those words are from the perspective of Pilate's wife. You know, there's a single verse. It talks about a dream that Pilate's wife had. And once I had those lyrics, it kind of I kind of realized the song was about different perspectives, you know, on this one event.
I had forgotten that Pilot's wife was part of that whole story.
Yeah, it's like a blink and it's like a cameo. Mm-hmm. Because it's one verse and it's so mysterious. It's like, what was that dream? And what kind of relationship does Pilot have with his wife anyway? Does she always tell him her dreams? You know, there are all kinds of questions, but I only had 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was a physical restraint too, because I ordered a 12-inch record. So I was trying to write a song I could fit on. Because otherwise I would have to order a 12-inch and that would have been like way too big. So, and then actually the day before recording was when I came up with the fourth section, because I still wasn't totally happy with it. And I was straddling, you know, should the third section be super aggressive and heavier, or should it be more meditative and dreamlike? And then I realized, well, I can just add another section and stitch together to the previous section. That became the fourth section. And that's how the song came together. It was very haphazard.
So kind of the inspiration for the song was from this kind of assignment to write about the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah, one particular station, the sentencing. But it was part of this larger exhibit.
Like the Stations of the Cross, it's kind of these discrete parts that fit together to form this, the overall story.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the song also has kind of multiple parts. Do you think there's a relationship there, or am I just...
Probably, yeah. What is it called? The medieval, they used to call it the great chain of being, the microcosm, macrocosm. So, you know, that's probably part of it. You know, this is interesting. It's the first time I've been asked to interpret my own music. I feel so, I don't know. I don't feel like I should have the authority to interpret my own music, but I think that's a totally, totally right on right way of looking at it. Cause the Stations of the Cross is already about multiplicity of perspective. It's already about, I don't know. I think of it a bit like Rashomon. I mean, it's unfolding in time. It's not like it's always looping back to the same moment, but you are dealing with an overarching narrative, and yet there are these discrete moments. Maybe that was just in the back of my mind as I was writing the song. And I just have always, as much as possible, trying to get around the verse-chorus, you know. Sometimes that's just what the song wants to be.
Yeah, have you written other songs that have kind of been in parts like this?
A few times. And in fact, as I was writing the song, I realized there's a specific subgenre in my music that builds. You know, it'll start with like one or two instruments and it'll build to like a crescendo. And so I think this song has something of that. You know, I tend to gravitate toward that. But I think that's why I was glad I came up with the fourth section. Because that kind of took it somewhere new. Well, you'll find a lot of my references are Beatles songs. So like Day in the Life is the archetype of this kind of song, right? Where it starts off just with John and the piano and the guitar, and then it sounds like the end of the world by the end with the whole orchestra, and then that's it, right? And that's part of my DNA, and a lot of my songs will just, if I'm not careful to craft it a little bit, and disguise the origin, will want to do that. So, you know, little things like the fourth section of the song help me to make sure that each song has its own character. I guess while still having like a family resemblance to the other songs. I was playing it for my wife, and she was digging all of it, and I could tell she just thought that part, what do you have to say, in the third section wasn't quite working. So that was what pushed me to come up with, instead of what do you have to say, like what do you have to say, shorter and hostile. And from there, the third section became more of the heavier, because once I had that hostility, I felt like the third section wanted to be all about distortion and snare I don't often write songs that are inspired by 90s rock, but I grew up in that era, you know. And the third section is definitely inspired by the music I actually grew up with. Because I also had Dylan and the Beatles and Frank Sinatra in my house, you know, but Soundgarden and Nirvana, like that was the stuff, and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Oasis, all that stuff was what my peers were actually listening to. So I guess the third section is kind of my salute to that era. So that's another challenge, because when we do it live, it's going to sound different than it does on the record.
Yeah, have you played it out?
We did it once. We did it once about a month ago, and that was literally a week after we recorded it in the studio. And it was good. It just feels different. It's difficult, first, because there's so many different sections with their own moods. And I think when you're in the studio, you can layer those moods. And then when you're performing it live, you have to be a little bit schizophrenic. Maybe you have to be a bit schizophrenic in general as a musician if you want to express a lot of different things. But especially with a song that's going from, you know, this dreamy state to this interrogation to this much more kind of alarming, heavier third section. I think that's one of my goals, is to nail that in the performance. David really is a great drummer, and I kind of put a lot on his plate because he had to learn this song in 24 hours, complete different twists, and we did it in, we did his whole part in, well, it was in two chunks, but it was one take for each chunk. Sections 2 and 3 were one take, and section 4 was another take. But, yeah, he nailed it. The second section of the song is Pilate speaking, and he's kind of... I wanted it to be more of a rapid-fire interrogation. So that's why, you know, there's fewer spaces in between the phrases, and the notes are shorter. You know, I had this idea of very martial, you know, almost taking it to an image of like a Roman military, you know, with those beating the drums of war. What I like about his drumming in the second section is that he has the menace, but it's not over the top yet. And then the third section, yeah, I mean, he's just... banging the shit out of those drums. First he was silent as a stone cold killer or a killjoy filler for the main man. And then a man. It started with playing with syllables. Like, I was just watching my niece, this video of my niece, and she's trying to sing along to The Wheels on the Bus. And it's just, she's not even 2 years old, and it really struck me. You know, before we learn to speak as a way of communicating with each other, we're just copying adult syllables, you know, and we're just playing with sound. That's how language starts for each person. And a lot of times that's how my song starts. So I was playing with killjoy, kill, fill, you know, that kind of thing. It's a funny line when I look back at it, because the word kill, right? That's like a badass word. You know, it connotes badassness. But then when you link it to joy, killjoy, it's almost like, if you really break it down, the first part sounds like it's badass, and then it ends up like a wet noodle. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's a disillusionment inside. That's how it seems to me anyway. I don't know if my parsing of killjoy is accurate or not, but that's how it feels to me.
Sort of the thing that I like about it is, like, right, that those images are kind of opposed, you know, like the stone cold killer and the killjoy filler, like the killjoy filler for the main man. I'm just kind of picturing, like, you know, an opening act for the guy that everyone is there to really see.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's exactly it. You know, and that's the part of this story, you know, this story that has been told over and over and over and sometimes terribly, you know, this story of the Passion of Christ that I think is so interesting is that, like, the characters in the story have these two simultaneous views of this person, that on one hand, he's a criminal and he's a threat and, you know, might even be a terrorist, you know, because the church tradition now is that he was crucified with two thieves, but the original word is something closer to revolutionary, right? So on one hand, they see him as a threat. But on the other hand, you know, he's a joke. He's seen as a buffoon. You know, that's why the Roman soldiers, they say, okay, hail King of the Jews, whatever. And they whip him and it's both at the same time. And that was just always so, so interesting to me that the climax of this story in the Gospels is this problem of perception. You know, that this person at the center of it is simultaneously seen as such a huge threat and also as a massive joke. And not only that, but that's the center of this sacred story. You know, I've always thought it was so strange that effectively what this Holy Week story is about is commemorating and even treating as sacred blasphemy, celebrating the fact that God is being treated both as a criminal and as a joke, you know, both as a killer and a killjoy. And honestly, you know, in my own spiritual practice, sometimes God looks like both at the same time too. Whenever you see some kind of natural disaster, or when I do, you know, that the killer part, and then other times the killjoy part, and then other times it's like something else entirely. That's my experience of it. The last couple of lines. She didn't have the right time because the time you were serving was the right kind. So remember, I actually worked a long time to figure out how to close that. Because I think I was playing with time, and at first it was something like, she didn't have the right time, but you said, you know, but you had the right time, and, you know, dumb things like that. And then I realized, you know, in the context of the song, she didn't have the right time means that she thinks that it's the middle of the night, but it seems like in the dream, she's meeting Christ, and Christ has been waiting there for a long time. So that's what she means by she didn't have the right time. But then serving time is different, right? Serving time is prison, and serving time is the law. That's what is really interesting and will, in some way, always be interesting to me about this story, which is that it's about serving time.
So, if people would like to hear more of your music, what should they do?
People can go to www.brotherkmusic, all one word, .com. And that's kind of a one stop for videos, concert announcements, you know, new releases. You can also go to my Bandcamp, brotherk.bandcamp.com. And help me stave off penury by purchasing my product.
I recommend it.
Thank you. All right. And of course, you know, the usual Facebook, Twitter, they're both facebook.com/brotherkmusic, twitter.com/brotherkmusic.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, my name's Jacob Haller, and I have music and other podcasts and things. You can find out about all that stuff at jacobhaller.com. And I have a website devoted to this podcast, tellmeaboutyoursong.com. And I also have a blog where I post I'll post links to all of Lucas's websites and whatnot at yoursongpodcast.tumblr.com. That's T-U-M-B-L-R. And with all that said, we're going to go out and listen to the entire song we've been talking about, Stranger from the Country, from the Brother K. Millay. Thanks for listening. As it seemed.
better than you might think if you'd allow me to show you. Cause this is the hour and the bow. She could feel it was all going wrong. You'd been waiting too long in that time. But you said she didn't have the right time. Cause the time you were serving was the right kind.
Fire.
Do you remember how we met, by the way?
Yes, I do. We were at, man, what? Okay, what's the radio station?
WFMU.
WFMU, right? Their talent show. Yeah, that was fun. That was my first time doing anything like that, and that was my only time I've ever done one of those variety show kind of situations. I just remember being very frantic.
Yeah.
For the whole evening. Because, they thrust you on stage and you have like three minutes to set up.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have the hook, but I kept imagining someone backstage with like a hook, ready to.
Right. And someone was going to play the trombone if we went on too long.
Yeah. That was a useful exercise, actually. I feel like if I did that once every three months, it would keep me on my toes as a performer.
Rita did great. Our next act, Andy, our first electric act of the evening. He brings rock and roll with a literacy problem. Please welcome Brother K.
Crawl out of the grave. Whoa!